So I made a mistake in one verse, so I will do it again. Or should I do it from the beginning? Let's do it from the beginning.
Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militanjena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaiham Dadati Svapadantikam Bande Aham Shri Guru Shri Juta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanitam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanitamscha.
Thank you all very much. I'm very happy to be here with you all today. And I wanted to come here without making any announcement, because I wanted to listen to Radhanath Maharaj. But somehow my plan didn't work. But Maharaj will be coming soon. He's just stuck with a few things. He'll be coming back soon. And until Maharaj comes, I'll say a few things. I opened into fourth chapter. It's a very nice chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna very systematically explaining the spiritual reality. He started to advise Arjuna at a very critical time. The battle of Kurukshetra was about to begin, and right at the time when the battle was about to begin, the conch shells, blowing the conch shell, it was announced that now the battle is about to begin. Or battle actually began. The blowing the conch shell was actually the announcement charge. Start the battle. And at that time, Arjuna just wanted to see who is standing on the other side, who he will have to fight. And seeing them, Arjuna became very overwhelmed. He saw that his guru, his grandfather, Bhishma Dev, guru Dronacharya, his friend and cousins, and other many very intimate relatives were standing on the enemy line. And it was a battle. These battles were very serious matter. Like, it was a matter of killing others or getting killed. And Arjuna had to consider at that time, these are the people that I have to kill. And he felt, no. he decided that he was not going to claim his right over his kingdom by killing all these very close relatives and friends. And at that time, Arjun was feeling a very deep emotion which led him to practically drop his... He could not hold his bow anymore. He became so weak with his emotion. His body was trembling. Bepathuscha sharire me roma harshascha jayate. My body is trembling and hair standing on end. And he told Krishna, Krishna, I can't fight this battle. And at that time, Krishna started to advise Arjun. In this way we can see that Krishna created a perfect arrangement, a perfect situation. Krishna was not imparting the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita in an ashram. Krishna was not imparting the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita in a normal environment, in a normal situation. It was a very, very special situation that was arranged in the middle of the battlefield. And when we meditate upon the condition of Arjun, then we can see that it was at a time when Arjun was seriously considering these are the people that he'll have to kill, and he felt that he can't kill them. And he became so emotionally moved, he became so emotionally overwhelmed that he felt that he was totally unfit to fight. And then Krishna just chastised Arjun, or he pushed Arjun with the right knowledge, right understanding. And initially he was telling him, chastising him. Kutastva kashmalam idam vishame samupasthitam. How come this kashmalam idam, these impurities have come to your heart, polluted your heart? At a very, very critical time, vishame samupasthitam. This is not the time to become overwhelmed with emotion. This is the time to fight. This is the time that you have to kill these people. And then Krishna started to advise Arjun that he first gave some very practical advice. That look, Arjun, if you leave the battle now, then people will think that you are a coward. They won't consider that it is your feeling for your relatives and friends that you are not fighting. People will think that you became afraid seeing your enemy line. And those who are seeing your enemy, who is actually very, very powerful, far too powerful than your army. Actually, compared to Pandava army, Kaurava army was far greater, far more powerful. They were, at least numerically, they were about four times larger than the Pandava army. And we can understand very easily that how difficult it must have been for the Pandavas to face the battle at that time. Like, they became considerably weak. They became very, very weak. Like, we can consider, for 13 years plus 1 year, for 14 years, they had been away from the kingdom. For 13 years, they were in exile, and for 1 year, they had to be incognito. And within this 14 years, the Kauravas have gathered their strength. Under Karna's leadership, Kauravas actually took over or brought the entire world under their power. Karna went ahead, conquered all the kings of throughout the world made them submit to Duryodhan. So Duryodhan actually became the ruler of the entire earth planet through this Rajasuya Jagya, Rajasuya sacrifice, and the entire world was with them, practically. Now we can see one side, for 14 years they have gathered their strength. They're not only the government, they're not only the ruler, but they actually are the ruler of the entire world. The entire world actually was siding with them. And only then Pandavas came back after 14 years. And they claimed their share of the kingdom. And Duryodhana's answer was that without a war, I'm not going to give the piece of land the size of the tip of the needle. So they were forced into this battle. And why Duryodhana was so confident? Because he felt that these people, they are so weak. They don't have any strength. And we are so powerful. Materially, of course, Duryodhana's side was extremely powerful. There was no way Pandavas could actually won the battle. But the Kshatriyas, when they're challenged into a fight, they have to accept it. So when Duryodhana said that that we'll see each other in the battlefield, they had to accept the challenge. And then they tried to gather their strength. Those who are very close to them, they approached them and they sided with the Pandavas. But the rest of the world was siding with Kauravas. So apparently, Pandava side was extremely weak and they didn't actually have any possibility to win the battle. And this is actually Krishna's arrangement. Krishna created a situation where his side was didn't have any hope of winning the battle. So Krishna creates a hopeless situation, and in that hopeless situation, Krishna intervenes and he changes the situation completely. His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So now we'll listen to Radhanath Maharaj give the class. So I spoke, I told them that until the time you come, I was going to speak, and when you come, you'll take over. We are doing this fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. We're just giving the introduction, so you start from the first chapter.
If you persist, I will go away.
Okay. So, Krishna created an impossible situation in the Battle of Kurukshetra, where Pandavas didn't actually have any scope or any possibility of, apparently, materially, they didn't have any possibility of winning the battle. And that's why Krishna made that point that, Arjun, if you leave the battlefield, then everybody will say that you became afraid and you left the battlefield. And he also pointed out that, as a matter of fact, for a Kshatriya, it is a great good fortune to have this kind of opportunity to fight in a battle. Because the understanding, the Vedic understanding is that when a Kshatriya dies in the battlefield, he goes to heavenly planet. Just by dying in the battlefield, one goes to heavenly planet. And if he wins the battle, then he will enjoy the earth planet. So there is no loss. If you win the battle, then you will enjoy the earth planet. If you lose the battle, you will enjoy the heavenly planet. And not the lose the battle. If you die in the battle, you will enjoy the heavenly planet. So, this is a great opportunity. So take advantage of this opportunity. But Arjuna's consideration was not either to win the battle or lose the battle, because he knew that he was going to win the battle. A kshatriya, when he goes to the battlefield, he never thinks that he is going to lose. Although the understanding is there that he may not come back. When a kshatriya went to the battlefield, he could die. And that's why war was a serious business. Like, they fought either to win or to die. So when a warrior went to the battlefield, he did not really consider that he may lose. His consideration was that he was going to win. He was going to win the battle. It's all right. So Arjuna's consideration was not, I mean, obviously Arjuna was not afraid. But Krishna pointed out, and then Krishna started to advise, give him the very, very important advice. The first thing that Krishna pointed out to Arjuna, that a spirit soul is eternal. And a living entity takes birth in the material nature time and time again. It is not that just once one is born, the life begins with birth and it ends with death. Yes, the duration of the body is limited between this birth and death. But the existence of a spirit soul is eternal. Therefore, when Arjuna said that I can't kill these relatives of mine, and he gave various reasons also why he should not fight, why it won't be proper to kill all these people, all the leaders of the society, human society, the great warriors and great kshatriya personalities, because the kshatriyas actually maintain the society. And if all these kshatriyas were killed, then the law, there would be an acute crisis of law and order in this planet. And that's why Arjuna reasoned with Krishna that he shouldn't fight. And then Krishna started to advise him when Arjuna submitted himself to Krishna. So this is also another very important point comes out in the Bhagavad Gita, that one must surrender. Prabhupada is pointing out emphatically that Krishna did not really start to give advice to Arjuna until Arjuna accepted Krishna as the spiritual master. When he submitted himself, that he is completely bewildered, he doesn't know what to do, and now he is surrendering himself to Krishna and accepting Krishna as his spiritual master and requesting him to accept him as a disciple. Shishyaste aham swadhi mantang prapannam. Prapannam, I am surrendering myself unto you. Prapatti means surrender, and prapannam means one who has become surrendered. Now I am a surrendered soul unto you. Please advise. Please guide me. Then only Krishna started to advise him. And what is the first thing Krishna told him? He just put Arjun right in his place. Okay, you accepted me as your guru and you are my disciple. You are accepting, you are asking me to accept you as my disciple. Recognize your position. Recognize your position as the one who is in ignorance and who is in need of knowledge. And there was a mild chastisement. Ashachvan anusochastvam pragyavadamscha bhashashi gatasuna gatasumscha nanu shochanti pandita. You are lamenting over something that one shouldn't lament about. Yet you are speaking the wise words. Pragyavadamscha bhashashi. Because gata suna gata sungscha nanu sochanti pandita. One who is pandit, one who is learned, one who is situated in knowledge, he doesn't lament over something that is temporary, that is transient. That is transient will come and go. So why lament over it? This body is transient. Body is changing constantly. There is, for the impermanence, there is no existence, no real existence, and for the permanent, there is no cessation. So that is the point Krishna made right at the beginning. Don't speak like a wise man and act like a fool, Arjuna. And then he tells him that, look, Arjun, there was never a time when all these kings and you and I did not exist, and there will never be a time when we will not continue to exist. Na tve bahang, na tu eva aham, you or I. Jatu nasam, na tvang neme janadhipa. Janadhipa, the king. There was never a time when you and I and these kings did not exist. Na bhuya na bhavishyama sarve vayam atapparam. We will continue to exist all the time. And then Krishna started to explain to him the difference between the body and the soul. Difference between the matter and spirit. This body is made of matter, but the soul is spiritual. Matter is inert, soul is conscious. The consciousness in a living entity, consciousness in a living body, is not coming from the matter, is not coming from the body itself, it's coming from the soul. In this way we can see the wisdom of Bhagavad Gita is so scientific. It's extremely scientific. There is no room for speculation and there is no room either for blind faith. Krishna doesn't want us to blindly accept something. Krishna wanted us to accept it intelligently. That means to become convinced scientifically. And Krishna also gave a very scientific knowledge, and Krishna presented in a very scientific way, but at the same time Krishna is making Arjun to ask some very pertinent questions. Through Arjun Krishna is making the wisdom of Bhagavad Gita unfold in a most wonderful way. And then after establishing the difference between the matter and spirit, the difference between the body and the soul, Krishna pointed out in the third chapter how a living entity must act for the sake of Krishna and the divine arrangement he made through the demigods. Krishna is making reminding Arjuna that there is a line of authority. So accept that authority. The material nature is being controlled by different controllers, and establish a harmonious relationship with them. When you take something from them, make sure that you pay them. And the payment comes in the form of sacrifice. And these demigods are acting on behalf of Krishna as his agent. In our day-to-day life also we see that whenever we accept some facility, we must pay for that. We consume electricity, and at the end of the month, the bill comes from the electricity department. We have to pay the bill. If we don't pay the bill, then what will happen? The line will be cut. There won't be any electricity. Similarly, in the greater and broader arrangement of this nature, the demigods are controlling different affairs of the material nature. There are different departments and there are different departmental heads. And we must accept all the facilities are coming due to the arrangements that have been made, and they are actually controlling those arrangements. So we must have a harmonious relationship. We must submit ourselves to them. We must remain grateful to them and express our gratitude towards them. And then finally, ultimately, we have to recognize that Krishna is the supreme controller. Krishna is the supreme authority. They are the demigods are the secondary authorities. But the principal, the final authority is Krishna. Just as in a business organization, there are different departmental heads or managers. But on top of everyone is the chairman. So similarly, in this arrangement of the management structure of the universe, although different demigods are taking care of different departments, but ultimately it is Krishna who is the supreme controller. The demigods can be identified as controllers, but Krishna is the supreme controller. And then, after giving this advice, of karma yoga, whatever you are doing, you do it for my pleasure. Jat karosi, jadasnasi, whatever you do, whatever you eat, jat juhasi, dadasi jat, whatever you offer in sacrifice, and whatever you give in charity, tat kurusha madarpanam, you offer them to me. And then Krishna told Arjun, just in the passing, just casually told Arjun, this knowledge I gave to Vivashan first. Imam Vivashate Yogam Praktavan Aham Abhayam and Vivashvan Manave Praho Manu Rikshakove Abravit. I gave this knowledge first to Vivashvan. And then Vivashan gave it to his son, imparted this knowledge unto his son, Vaivashyata Manu. The Manu gave it to his son, Ikshaku, in whose dynasty Lord Ramchandra appeared. Manur Ikshakuve Avravit.
When did you come? Manur Ikshash.
Manur Ikshakuve Avravit. Manu gave it to Ikshaku. And then he says, Evam Parampara Praptam Imam Rajar Shayovitu. In this way, through a chain of disciplic succession of Rajarshis, the kings, but those who are actually saints, Raja Rishis. They're kings, they're Rajas, but actually they're Rishis, they're sages, they're saints. So this knowledge was flowing in a chain of disciplic succession through the Rajarshis. But then he pointed out that Shakale Neha Mahata Yoga Nashta Parantapa. The knowledge has been spoiled. This yoga, this transcendental wisdom that was flowing through the disciplic succession, Sakale Neha Maha, Sakale Neha, in due course of time, due to the influence of time, this yoga nashta, this knowledge has been spoiled. Parantapa. Arjuna. Then Arjuna comes up with a question here. That aparo bhavato janmo parang janma vivashyata. Katham etad vijaniyam tamadau praktavaniti. That this knowledge that you said that you are going to impart unto me, you are imparting unto me today, sa evayam mayate adya yoga prakta puratana bhaktosi me sakha cheti rahasyam hi etad uttamam. So that is the next, the previous verse. I skipped it anyway. So here also a very important point has come up, that Krishna, as he will do in many times afterwards, he pointed out that Arjuna, I'm imparting this knowledge unto you because bhaktosi, you are my friend. You are my devotee and you are my friend. Bhaktosi me sakhacheti. That's why I'm revealing, I'm unfolding rahasam, this secret, this great secret, this great mystery is being unfolded unto you because you are my devotee, you are my friend. In a similar note, in the 9th chapter also Krishna said the same thing, that when he is again telling him that this Rajavidya, Rajagucham, at the 9th chapter Krishna is revealing the Rajavidya, the king of knowledge. And it's not only the king of knowledge, it is Rajagucham. It is the king of all the secrets also. It is the most precious secret. But Arjun responded by saying, expressing his doubt, that aparam bhavato janma param janma vivashyata. You are born just the other day. But Vivashyan was born so many millions of years ago. Now how can you claim that you imparted this knowledge to Vivashyan? Then Krishna dispels his doubt. But in the purport, Srila Prabhupada very wonderfully explains that actually this Arjuna asking this question is not that Arjuna was in doubt. It's not that Arjuna doubted Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because Arjuna is an eternal devotee, a Nitya Siddha associate of Krishna. So how is it possible that Arjuna is coming up with this question? But Arjuna is asking these questions for us. Actually, Arjuna has been placed there to ask these questions or act in this way because Krishna wanted to impart the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita for the benefit of all the living entities of this world for all time. So Arjuna's question was not out of his doubt about Krishna's position, but in order to benefit us to get the right answer, to get the proper understanding. And then Krishna is telling Arjuna that ajopishan abhayatma bhutanam isharopishan. Krishna makes another point. Krishna tells Arjuna, bohuni me byatitani janmani tavacha Arjuna. Tani ahang veda sarvani natvang betha parantapa. Bohuni me byatitani. Arjuna, many times we have come here, both you and I. But I remember all that happened, and in each time I came here, but you don't. That is the difference between a jiva, a living entity, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How he remembers, how is it possible for him to remember, is beyond us. It's inconceivable. We'll never be able to understand how it's possible for Krishna to remember everything that that he does in all his different incarnations. We'll never be able to understand. But not only that, Krishna remembers what he does in his different incarnations, but Krishna also remembers what we all have done in all the time since time immemorial. That is Krishna's inconceivable capacity. And that is why Krishna is Krishna, and we are what we are. And that is why we should, a living entity, a jiva, should never pretend to be God, never claim to be God. So in this way, Krishna is unfolding this wisdom to Arjuna, that bohuni me byatitani janmani tavacha Arjuna. Krishna is pointing out that the living entity takes birth time and time again. But unfortunately, most of the times a living entity forgets everything that he had done in one life at the time of death. Although we had been here for many, many lifetimes, but each lifetime, as we came to the end of that life, at the time of death, memory was wiped out. And when we started the next life, from our birth, we started off with another new sheet, and the memory started to put informations in the blank tape. Each time we are born, we get a new tape, and we start recording in that. And that also we record most of the time with a blunt recording head. But that's not the case with Krishna. And then Krishna is pointing out why he doesn't forget. Because ajopishan abhayatma bhutanam isharopishan prakritim syam adhishthaya sambhavami atma mayaya. Our birth and Krishna's birth are completely different. Krishna is born, he is Aja. He is beginning with the point that although I take birth, but I am unborn. I don't need to take birth. I am eternal, I am unborn, I am ever existing. Aja. I was never born. We all are born, but Krishna was never born. Even Brahma was born, but Krishna was never born. Krishna's birth is different. That will come afterwards. When Krishna says, janma karma chame dibhyam, in this one verse, Krishna actually reveals the secret. But before going into that, let us consider Krishna's own statement. Ajopishan abhayatma bhutanam isharopishan. Although I am unborn, although I am inexhaustible, abhay, and although I am bhutanam ishar, I am the Lord of all living entities, Prakritim Shyam Adhishthaya, taking shelter of my internal potency, Sambhavami Atma Mayaya. With my internal potency, with my Atma Maya, I manifest myself. I'm not supposed to be here actually. In this material nature, Krishna doesn't have any business. Just as a king doesn't have any business in the prison house, similarly Krishna doesn't have any business in this material nature. He doesn't need to come. But he comes out of his causeless mercy. Just as Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Jibe Daya Kori Shapar Shad Shiyodham Shaho Abotori Ottanto Durlabho Prem Korivare Dan Shikhay Sharanagoti Bhakotero Pran. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared along with his associates and his dham simply out of his causeless mercy, Jive Daya Kori, in order to bestow his mercy upon the living entities. And why? What was that mercy? Uttanto Durlabho Prem Koribare Dan, in order to bestow, in order to distribute the very, very rare, very precious, very rare Krishna Prem. To distribute that Krishna Prem, he has appeared. So Krishna comes out of his causeless mercy in order to teach the living entities the science of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, there wouldn't have been any possibility for us. If Krishna did not make this arrangement by coming himself or by making his devotees come from the spiritual sky, this knowledge wouldn't have been available. And then he makes this knowledge flow through a disciplic succession. Sambhavami, he is saying Sambhavami, that means I manifest myself. Krishna is not born, he just manifests himself. And why does he come? Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharataha abhutthanam adharmasya tadachmanam shrijamaha. Why and when Krishna comes? Whenever there is a decline of religious principles and an uprise of irreligiosity. And paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma sangsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Krishna says that he comes when there is a decline of religious principle and an increase of irreligiosity. At that time, in order to protect his devotees and annihilate the miscreants, Krishna comes in order to establish dharma, a religious, true religious principles. And then Krishna is making a very important point here. He is saying, janma karma chave divyam evam javetti tattvataha takta dehaṁ punar janma naiti mameti so Arjuna. O Arjun, one who understands that my birth and my activities are divine, just as he himself mentioned in the previous verse, ajopisan abhayatma bhutanam isharopisan. And as he pointed out that he comes in order to bestow his mercy upon the living entities in this material nature, he doesn't need to take birth. His appearance is simply arranged by his internal potency, sambhavami atma mayaya. He manifests himself through his internal potency, yogamaya. Now when we recognize that Krishna is Aja, but still he took his birth, therefore his janma and his karma, his activities are divyam, divine, transcendental. Evam yo vyakti tattvatah, in truth. Tvakta deham punarjanma naiti mameti shvarjuna. Isn't it a wonderful thing? If we simply understand that Krishna's birth is divine, then after leaving this body we won't have to take birth again. All we have to understand that Krishna's birth and Krishna's activities are beyond the rules of this material nature, beyond the jurisdiction of this material nature. If we simply understand that, we will become free from the cycle of birth and death. And freedom from the cycle of birth and death means liberation. So we can see liberation is so easy for a devotee. To begin with, a devotee knows Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna's birth is simply his pastimes. It is, although it appears that he took birth as the son of Mother Yashoda, as the son of Mother Devaki and Vasudev, but actually Krishna was not born. Krishna simply manifested himself through these pastimes. Now, in order to become a devotee, doesn't one have to understand this point? According to his will. And whatever he does is simply his pastimes. So in order to become a devotee, does one have to understand this tattva? In truth, in reality, in a scientific way? Then is a devotee liberated? Will tatta deha punarjanma? Naiti mameti swarjuna. So devotees are free from the cycle of birth and death. Then the question may arise, but can the devotee come back again? Can the devotee take birth again? Yes, he may. But he will take birth by the divine arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, just as Arjun took his birth. Krishna comes to perform his pastimes, and Krishna brings his associates also along with him. In Krishna's pastimes, two types of living entities participate. One is Nitya Siddhas and the Sadhana Siddhas. Nitya Siddha means eternally liberated souls, those who are in the spiritual sky, those who are eternal associates of Krishna. When Krishna says, okay, I'm going to earth planet to perform my pastimes, and you come with me. So Krishna selects. And those living entities, those Nitya Siddha associates of Krishna, come with Krishna. And at the same time, the sadhana siddhas, those who are performing devotional service, sadhana bhakti, and by performing sadhana bhakti, those who have become considerably purified, they get a chance to participate in Krishna's pastimes and thus go back to Krishna's Nitya Leela in the spiritual world. So, Krishna, when a devotee takes birth, then we have to understand that it is by Krishna's divine arrangement that a devotee takes birth in order to fulfill certain mission of Krishna. Just as Prabhupada came, and when Prabhupada came, we see, when Prabhupada went to America, so many devotees immediately came and joined Srila Prabhupada. And once one devotee asked Prabhupada, that Prabhupada, I was so fallen, I was involved in so many sinful activities. Prabhupada said, they're all superficial. Because as soon as I called you, you immediately came. And you gave up all your bad habits. So those activities were superficial. Now, from this statement, what we understand? We understand that when Prabhupada came, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu planted his many, many eternal associates of Mahaprabhu to help Srila Prabhupada, another eternal associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a very special eternal associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to help him, Srila Prabhupada. So those who came to help Srila Prabhupada in his Krishna consciousness movement, and those who are still helping Srila Prabhupada in spreading this and continuing this Krishna consciousness movement, like Radhanath Maharaj and all these wonderful devotees, we should recognize that they are not ordinary living entities, but they are very, very special personalities, eternal associates of Srila Prabhupada, to help Srila Prabhupada in spreading this Krishna consciousness movement throughout the world. So, if we take shelter of these wonderful devotees, because spiritual life means taking shelter of devotees. Spiritual life begins with surrender. And the real surrender is not surrender to the Lord, but surrender to the devotees of the Lord. Krishna himself is saying that those who claim that they are my devotees, they are not my devotees. But those who are my devotees, they are my devotees. So in order to become a devotee, we have to become the devotees of devotees. Everybody wants to surrender to the big person. But that's also a kind of a false ego. I am big, therefore I must surrender to someone who is big. But our business is actually to become small. And that will be displayed, that mood will be displayed when we are prepared to surrender to the devotee of the Lord. And devotees are very humble. It's very difficult to recognize the devotee. A devotee will not reveal himself. Devotee will not manifest his greatness. He'll keep it hidden. Just like we can consider, like Radhanath Maharaj was hiding for so many years. He didn't want to come up in the front. He stayed at the back. And he was hiding himself. But no matter how much a devotee wants to hide, Krishna doesn't allow him to hide. Krishna brings him forward. And Krishna makes him shine forth with his brilliance of devotion. And this way, it's so wonderful that today the world is recognizing the greatness of the wonderful devotee, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. So
I will go back into hiding.
So now I will request His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj to enlighten us.
Nama, our deepest gratitude to His Holiness Srila Bhakti Charu Swami Maharaj, who has so brilliantly presented in just a few minutes the very essence of the substance of Bhagavad Gita. Srila Bhakti Charu Maharaj not only speaks the essence of Bhagavad Gita, but he lives the essence of Bhagavad Gita. Thus, we can understand why, just after being a devotee for a year or so, Srila Prabhupada awarded him sannyas. and entrusted him to translate all his books into Srila Prabhupada's own mother language, Bengali. Most of the other languages that were being translated, Italian, Spanish, Russian, Swahili, all these different languages, Portuguese, they weren't Prabhupada's languages. So Prabhupada really didn't critique those books. But he asked Bhakti Charu Maharaj to translate the books in his own mother language. The mother language of the eternal associates of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I would see him up early, early morning, every single day, working so hard. He translated all of Srila Prabhupada's books, practically single-handedly. When the spiritual master has such faith, such trust in the integrity of a disciple, that is the ultimate blessing of Krishna. And now, in reciprocation to that blessing of Srila Prabhupada, Bhakti Charu Maharaj is making Prabhupada's name and his mission famous throughout the world by this beautiful series, Abhay Charan, which people throughout the continents of the planet are learning about. Not only Srila Prabhupada's life, but the supreme principle of religion, which can only really be understood by understanding the life of a great acharya like Srila Prabhupada. Let us welcome His Holiness Srila Bhakti Charu Maharaj to our temple. Today we have, first time you have come? Very dear, very senior godbrother who has preached all over the world. He's very famous amongst Prabhupada disciples for his dancing, his kirtans, his preaching, his fearlessness, and many extraordinary activities he performs. You are from Chicago, and you helped start the first temple there. But he has been temple president in many places, and risking his life in so many wonderful ways in Africa. Prabhupada encouraged Ramkeli Prabhu to preach in the African continent, which is more or less his full-time service now, in the Ivory Coast, establishing an orphanage, temple, book distribution, preaching. Just a wonderful soul. I've been inviting him here for many years, and today, by our good fortune, he has come. Let us welcome Ramkeli Prabhu to Shivada. And of course, Radhakund Prabhu has been with us for a while. Let us welcome him again. Srila Bhakti Charu Maharaj was discussing in the beginning of his discourse the series of events that led to the great battle of Kurukshetra, in which Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Duryodhana was born in great royalty. due to that, he was famous, he was wealthy, and ultimately, he was very proud. There's a beautiful story in Srimad Bhagavatam which illustrates the danger of being proud of one's beauty and one's wealth. There was a demon. His name was Shankarachuda. He happened to be a personal associate of Kuvera, who was the treasurer of the demigods. That means having great facility for opulence and fame. You may think that it is a very prestigious and enviable position to be Kuvera. Can you imagine having control of the financial accounts and the treasury of the heavenly planets? Haribo. And he had all facilities for himself. But we see that those people who were close to him, oftentimes, due to the infatuation of that association, became offensive to others. Manigriva and Nala Kuvera. They were the sons of Kuvera. You would think they would be happy and peaceful, but they were rascals. Narada Muni came walking near the Mansarovar, near Mount Kailash, and they were bathing naked with women, trying to enjoy. The women ran away, thinking, we must cover our bodies, Narada Muni has come. But they were thinking, because they were so beautiful, so young, so famous, so wealthy, that why should we show any respect to anyone? They should respect me. So Narada Muni cursed them to become trees. But ultimately, because it was Narada Muni, they were trees in Nanda Maharaja's courtyard, eventually, in Gokul. So Shankarachuda, being the treasurer's assistant, he had such wealth. And the special benediction he had is he was given a jewel, most munificent, beautiful, illustrious jewel in practically all the heavenly planets. Bhakti Charu Maharaj is explaining, he was misapplying his example, talking about this lowly self. But people who are actually great, they try to hide their greatness. And people who aren't very great, whatever little they have or whatever they have, they try to reveal it to the whole world so people think, I am great, can't you see? So he had this jewel and he wore it 24 hours a day right in the center of the crown of his head. And that jewel was so attractive. So let me continue. It was the night of Holika Purnima. The same day, actually, that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in this world. Gaur Purnima and Holi is the same time. Krishna and Balaram were in the forests of Vrindavan with gopis. They were playing so many wonderful leelas. Krishna and Balaram, intoxicated with love for their devotees, they began to sing beautiful songs, praising the rising of the moon, which was bathing the whole Vrindavan forest with its glistening golden moonshine. and the stars appeared like precious effulgent jewels on the necklace of the sky. The breeze coming from Jamuna was carrying the fragrance of the Malika flowers, which is jasmine. That fragrance permeated the entire atmosphere. And the honeybees, smelling this fragrance everywhere, they were going mad in a state of intoxication, singing beautiful songs. Govinda and Sri Balaramji, seeing the environment in this way, were so happy. And the gopis, they were praising the divine qualities of Krishna and Balaram with charming songs. In reciprocation to their singing, Krishna and Balaram together began to sing. Shukadeva Goswami describes how they were singing the supreme concert. Krishna and Balaram singing together for the pleasure of their devotees. All the musical notes of all the musical scales were being perfectly sung simultaneously by Krishna and Balaram. We have all enjoyed and been purified immensely by the wonderful tapes and CDs produced by His Holiness Srila Bhakti Charu Maharaj. Such a melodious voice, saturated with bhakti and humility. If you listen to someone with a melodious voice, you can enjoy with your mind and senses to some extent. But if that voice is carrying genuine humility and bhakti, then that sound vibration pierces through your senses, your subtle body, right into your heart and touches your soul and awakens its sleeping state. But the source, the original singer of all singers, is Krishna and Balaram. It is described in Shastra that they have created all the musical scales and all the notes, the whole science, system, and theory of music. And they have presented it to humanity like the flowing river of the Ganges. And a person who has good intelligence knows that if you really want to get benefit, then you go to Ganges and you take that water and offer it back. You don't keep it for yourself. If you keep it for yourself, you don't really get the real benefit. But when you offer Ganga back to Ganga, then Ganga blesses you with pure devotion. So similarly, Krishna is the source of everything. Janad yasha yataha. Whatever He has given, if we offer it back to Him with our full attention, concentration, and capacity, Krishna accepts it. Krishna is the source of all music. Ultimately, all music is emanating from His singing. And therefore, according to our capacity, if we utilize whatever musical talents we have to praise Krishna, then Krishna accepts it. And in reciprocation, He purifies our heart and gives us Himself. So this is the Sankirtan movement. Is actually Kevala Ananda Kanda. It's joyful. We just sing and dance for Krishna. Krishna gives us the power to dance. We can't move without Him. The Paramatma in the heart is giving us all power to move our limbs. So if we have to move our limbs, the whole world is dancing.
So let us dance for Krishna. Everyone else is dancing like puppets in the strings of Maya, the strings of the three modes of material nature. She just has everyone dancing, 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 birth after birth after birth. But we dance for Krishna. The whole world is so influenced by music, so we want to influence the world by music, by chanting the holy names. One time, one of my godbrothers wrote to Srila Prabhupada and asked if it was all right to listen to the tapes and learn the kirtan styles of a certain godbrother of his. And Srila Prabhupada said that this godbrother is a very, very great soul and his kirtans are very nice. He said, but you must understand that the type of kirtan we're already doing is good. What makes a good kirtan is when the leader of the kirtan has sincere devotion and the followers are enthusiastic. Prabhupada didn't say good voice. He said sincere devotion. That is the essence. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he was in his last days of his life, one of the most beautiful singers of Gaudiya Math came to sing for him. And he asked for someone who didn't sing melodiously to come and sing, and sent the other person to the side, because he wanted to show his disciples and the world that what really pleases Guru and Krishna is not the sound of our voice, it's the intent of our heart, the purity of our consciousness, the sense of love. Krishna and Balaram, on this beautiful full moon night, they were singing, singing and singing to such an extent that Shukadev Goswami says that they were practically intoxicated by their own singing. And as they were singing, there were the most pleasing, loving pastimes taking place. At that moment, Shankachuda appeared. This puffed up rascal with his big, beautiful jewel in his crown. Intoxicated. Not with love, but with ego. He saw Krishna and Balaramji having pastimes with these beautiful gopis. Shastras explain that all the goddesses of fortune, of all the Vaikuntha planets, how beautiful are they? We'll chronologically explain. There's a story that one time Prabhupada saw a brahmachari, and he happened to have a picture of his previous girlfriend. Prabhupada saw it. What is this? He said, Prabhupada, isn't she beautiful? It's Krishna. I'm just seeing Krishna's beauty in this. Because Krishna's the source of all beauty, so I could really appreciate Krishna in this photo. So he was thinking, Prabhupada would say, oh, she's very beautiful. Prabhupada said, compared to the women in the heavenly planets, the most beautiful woman in this world is no better than a horse. In terms of beauty, it's no offense to the women, because the men are also. Compared to the men, we're also horses. But the most beautiful women of the heavenly planets, whose bodies, they don't need all kinds of deodorants and French perfumes, because they actually eat the nectar from lotus flowers in the heavenly worlds, their body has the fragrance of nectar. And the more they perspire, the more the whole environment becomes intoxicating with sweet nectar. Hare Krishna. That's why we don't want to go to the heavenly planets. Very, very difficult place to survive. Right? But all the heavenly damsels are absolutely insignificant in beauty to the goddess of fortunes in Vaikuntha. And all the unlimited goddesses of fortunes in the various Vaikuntha planets together don't equal in beauty to one of the gopis of Vrindavan, who are manifesting just part and parcel of the beauty of Srimati Radharani. So can you imagine when Shankarachuda saw these gopis? Hare Krishna. He was very much obsessed with enjoying them. And Srila Prabhupada explains, when a man is proud, intoxicated by wealth and fame, he falls under the illusion that there is no one better than me. And he cannot tolerate seeing anyone enjoying beautiful women, because he thinks, I should be enjoying these beautiful women. So, with this consciousness, he picked up a stick, big stick, and started shaking it at the gopis and ordering them to go with him in the northern direction. So as they were being dragged away by Shankarachuda, just like a thief or a jackal steals away someone else's cows, the gopis were being pushed farther and farther and farther away. They started crying out in great desperation, O Krishna, O Balaram. Krishna Balaram saw what was happening. They cried out, Do not fear, we will protect you. So Sri Krishna and Balaram both picked up big logs and went running for Shankarachuda. They came right up close to Shankarachuda, who had the custody of the gopis. When he saw them coming, it said that Krishna and Balaram looked like time personified and death personified approaching him. But for the gopis, they were seeing the same two people running, and they were seeing the embodiment of love and protection and eternal happiness. The gopis and Shankarachuda were seeing same Krishna Balaramji, but seeing completely, Krishna and Balaram are manifesting completely different, because the gopis surrender to Krishna and Shankarachuda wanted to enjoy the property of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of the cat holds the rat in mouth and holds the kitten in mouth. The kitten has learned how to take shelter of the cat. So when it's carried in the mouth of the cat, the kitten is thinking, my beloved mother will nourish me and protect me forever. Feels the greatest happiness in that situation. But the rat, because the rat has not surrendered to the cat, the rat has ulterior motives, is not one with the will of the cat. Therefore, the rat sees the cat as death personified, trembling in fear, trying to escape, but cannot escape. So if we try to possess and enjoy the property of Krishna,
Krishna will appear to us as cruel
death.
But if whatever we have, if we acknowledge, it's Krishna, I'm his servant, let me serve him with whatever we have. Our intelligence, our life, our wealth, our words, whatever is there, it's all Krishna's. Let me use it to glorify him. Then we will see Krishna everywhere, in everything, as our eternal protector and the object of eternal love.
Sankachuta became very afraid. His big, big jewel and his being an associate of Kuvera, very distinguished position, had no value at this point in his life. So what he did is he ran away as fast as he could.
So Krishna, seeing that the gopis were very tired from being pushed away by Sankachuta deep into the jungle, he entrusted them in the care of Balaram. And he personally went running after Sankachuta. And wherever Sankachuta ran away, Krishna was right behind him. And ultimately, Krishna grabbed him. And when Sankachuta was grabbed by Krishna, it is explained by Rupa Goswami that he expanded into a huge form. And he had these gigantic fangs. He was a yaksha. And he tried to get away. He tried to fight as hard as he could. But Krishna, with his fist, just knocked his head off. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki! Sankachuta was dead. Devotees don't like violence unless Krishna performs it. We're very happy to hear these stories. Even the most peaceful, non-violent devotee who can't even tolerate hearing about the inconvenience of an ant becomes ecstatic when Krishna kills Sankachuta. Then Krishna took that. He reclaimed his jewel. He took it from the crown and brought it back. And all the gopis were watching with great pleasure as Lord Sri Krishna presented that jewel to his beloved brother, Sri Balaram. Srila Rupa Goswami explains that after some time, Balaram presented that jewel to his supreme most worshipable object, Srimati Radharani, the queen of Vrindavan. And she put that jewel in her necklace. It was the most beautiful jewel. Krishna himself declared that this jewel is equal to my Kostubha Mani in its beauty and elegance. Sometimes Radharani would just look in that jewel and she would see the beautiful form of Krishna. And she would weep her tears on that jewel. She would put the jewel to her chest. She would put it to her head. After Lord Krishna left for Mathura with Akrura, the residents of Vrindavan were inundated in separation. We know from the scriptures that Srimati Radharani would sometimes go to Surya Kund to worship Surya, the sun god, simply for one purpose only, to meet Krishna. Krishna would actually meet her there. And she would worship sun god simply to give pleasure to Krishna. After Krishna left Vrindavan, Rupa Goswami describes that Sri Radharani and Anuradha,
little Radha,
who was Vishakha, born on the same day as her, they went together to the Jamuna, burning in separation. Now, you know Jamuna is daughter of sun god. And Vishakha, the Jamuna is also an expansion of Vishakha. And Yamaraj is brother of Jamuna. So they went underwater. And when Vishakha Devi and Srimati Radharani went under the water of Jamuna, they actually were transported to the sun planet, where Srimati Radharani met Surya. And in her devotion, because Surya facilitated so many times her meetings with Krishna, she presented to Surya this beautiful jewel that Krishna claimed from Shankachuda. And later on, some years later, Surya was so pleased with his devotee, Satrajit, that he awarded that jewel to him as a gift. And that was the Shamantaka jewel. And you know how Satrajit was killed by a lion? Anyways, it's a wonderful story. You should read it in Krishna book. This Shamantaka jewel really shows how greed for wealth, and wealth brings enjoyment and fame, what complications, implications, and suffering it could have in a person's life. This Satrajit was so proud of that jewel. Because he had the jewel, that jewel had the power to create so much gold every day. He was the wealthiest man alive. He was attached. And therefore there was a conspiracy and all these other things. And ultimately Satrajit was killed, yes? And then a lion got the jewel. And then Jambavan killed a lion, and he didn't know what the jewel was. He just gave it to his baby to play, yes? And then Krishna, he was looking, and he fought with Jambavan for a long time. And it was dark in the cave. Jambavan, they couldn't even see each other, really. They were just fighting for days. And then Jambavan realized that you're my beloved Lord, Sri Ramchandra. So he surrendered to Krishna and gave him the Shamantaka jewel. And Rupa Goswami explains, when Krishna got that jewel from Jambavan, he began to weep in ecstasy because he was thinking, this is the jewel that was covered by the tears of Srimati Radharani. This was her own precious necklace. So there's a long history. And in this history we see the great contrast between selfless love and material selfish greed. According to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this Shamantaka jewel, or Shankachuda, who is the proprietor of that jewel, he represents one of the great obstacles on the path of pure devotional service. These are obstacles that every devotee has to face and struggle against. They are obstacles that are so powerful, oftentimes like demons, that will conquer us with all certainty unless with great humility we take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and chant His holy name. Shankachuda represents the anartha within our hearts of wanting to acquire name and fame. That inclination, that proneness to acquire name and fame, and also to enjoy sense gratification under the plea of devotional service. This should be understood very carefully, because it's one of the most powerful influences of Maya Devi that is present in the heart of every conditioned soul. Dharmasya hyabhavaragyasya nartato yupakalpate. Srimad Bhagavatam condemns. You perform devotional service, you get results. If you think any result is for your satisfaction, then eventually you fall down. It's an impediment. As we practice Krishna consciousness, sometimes we're somewhat empowered by Krishna. He gives us facilities. He gives us wealth. He gives us knowledge. He gives us fame. We become very attractive. Previously, people used to just look at us like we were just ordinary people. But now they're coming and standing in line to touch our feet. And they're praising us. Oh, you are such a good speaker. You are such a good singer. You're such a good cook. You're such a good pujari. You put on your tilak so nice. Somehow or other, any praise we get, any affection and attention we get, the tendency is to become proud. Such a deep propensity. What is that propensity? It is Shankachuda who appears in your heart. The gopis are Krishna's property. Shankachuda is trying to take the gopis for his own enjoyment. Everything is Krishna's property. Fame is Krishna's property. Name is Krishna's property. If we want to enjoy fame and name, we are trying to enjoy Krishna's gopis in that sense, according to the analogy of Thakur Bhaktivinod. And what is the result? When there is false pride, then there is inevitable competition, material competition, and envy. This creates disunity. If everyone's humble and everyone understands I'm nothing, I'm just Krishna's instrument, or as Prabhupada prayed, I'm just a puppet in Krishna's hands, Krishna's the doer, then there can be complete unity, total love and trust amongst devotees. But when there is this proneness for Anta Saraswati Thakur declared to be fire in the mat. Distrust, disunity. This is the Sankirtan movement. Sankirtan means to glorify Krishna together. To glorify Krishna together, we have to be united in purpose. And you cannot be united without humility. Otherwise, people compete. People become envious. The propensity is if we're on the bottom, we want to be on the top. And if we're on the top, we want to stay on the top. That's material consciousness. And oftentimes that's inflicted within the hearts of devotees. And when leaders are behaving in such a way, then the general followers will think that this is what Krishna consciousness is about, getting to the top. But this is not what Mahaprabhu taught. Gopi Bhartur Padakamalayora Das Das Anudas. Mahaprabhu's aspiration was to get to the bottom. to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. Srila Prabhupada taught us, what is Vaikuntha consciousness? Every other devotee is Prabhu. I am Das, 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 Anu Das. If everyone is thinking like that, what love, what a society, what a culture. How much the world will be attracted when we all come together in this spirit to loudly chant the holy names. Srila Prabhupada, his life's mission was to be an instrument in the hands of Guru and Gauranga, to give the compassion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to the whole world by spreading Krishna consciousness. He gave his life for us. Perhaps the only person we have ever come in contact with that had unconditional love for us. Not only those persons who directly met him, Srila Bhakti Charu Maharaj was cooking for him with his own lotus hands. He was massaging him. He was speaking intimately with him, alone in his room. But even people who never saw Srila Prabhupada, even generations after Srila Prabhupada, if we are inspired by his books, if we're inspired by his tapes, if we're inspired by his life, if we develop faith in Krishna through his movement that he gave his life to establish, then we have received the unconditional love of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And how do we make advancement? By reciprocating with that love. Love means reciprocation. Srila Prabhupada told us, if you can show your love for me by how you cooperate with one another. Now, the nature of love is sacrifice. Sita showed her love by going to the forest for 14 years wearing tree bark as clothes, with no second thought. She told Sri Ram that without you, Ayodhya is like a barren forest, and with you the forest will be the most glorious Ayodhya town. Such sacrifice, that is love. Love is tested when we have to make sacrifices for the object of love. A mother for child is willing to risk her life millions of times a day because there's love. If there's a fire in the house, the mother will just, she won't even think twice. She'll just run right into the flames to get her child. She won't think, maybe I'll be burnt. And if she does think, it doesn't matter. So how to show love? To cooperate. And there's only one way to cooperate. In this age of Kali Yuga, it's the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. How is it possible to cooperate in the age of Kali? It can only be done according to a higher principle. Trinadapi sunichena tadoras pisehishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. To aspire, to pursue as our goal, not to be great, but to be more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, not to be respected, but to offer all respect to others and expect none in return. And in this spirit, to constantly chant the holy names. It is only if we accept this essence into our lives that we can actually cooperate on a spiritual platform. Devotee wants to push everyone else up. Sometimes, by Krishna's inconceivable arrangement, he pushes us up. But we never think we're up. We should always think like Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, such a great acharya. I'm more abominably fallen than the worm in stool. More fallen than Jagai and Madhai. If anyone hears my name, they lose their piety. If anyone speaks my name, they become sinful. This is actually how we think when we have pure consciousness. In that state of mind, we see the greatness of Krishna. We see the greatness of others. And we rejoice. Where there's no ego, there's pure love. But the Shankachuda is lurking in our heart. That proneness for name and fame. That inclination to enjoy what belongs to Krishna. He had that big, beautiful jewel. We all have our jewels. Some of them are little jewels, some of them are big, big jewels. Whatever we're good at, whatever we're proud of, whatever we can do, it's like a jewel. That jewel is meant to decorate Radha Gopinath. It's not meant to wear in our own crown. That is the difference between a Vaishnav and a Shankachuda. He should have came and said, Krishna, this jewel is the best thing I have. It's yours. Krishna wouldn't have smashed his head. Krishna would have given him pure love of God. All he had to do was just give up that jewel. It ended up in Krishna's hands anyway. But he had to die a miserable death in the process. So whatever we have, whoever we are, whatever we can do, that's our jewel. Don't keep it in your crown. Offer it to Krishna. With humility, with devotion. Offer it, Srila Bhakti Charu Maharaj was explaining, the greatest service to Krishna is service to his devotees. Whatever we can do, whatever we have, let us offer it for the welfare of the Vaishnavas. Then Krishna will accept it. And Srila Prabhupada said, don't think that if you give something to Krishna, you have something less. You have millions of times more. That fruit lady seller, she just gave Krishna some fruits, best fruits she had. She didn't even know he was Krishna. She just thought, he's such a beautiful little boy who's come running with a couple grains in his hands. Please give me fruit. She gave him so many fruits. And she turned around and saw that her fruit basket was filled with precious jewels. Not material jewels. But the Purushartha Shiromani, the crest jewel of Prem Bhakti. Because she just gave her best fruits to Krishna, she attained the ultimate perfection of pure love of God, the greatest of all treasures. Even in the Christian religion, Lord Jesus said, do not put your treasure in this world. Because wherever your treasure is, that's where your heart will be.
don't use your intelligence, your wealth, your abilities for this world. Because in this world, your treasure will be eaten by the moths and the insects. It will be stolen by thieves. Invest all your treasures in the kingdom of God. There are no thieves. There are no insects and moths.
Yat karoshi rashnashi yajdu hoshi didasiyat. Krishna says, whatever you can do, whatever you offer you give away, do it for me. That is the perfection of life. So we have to be aware that this representation of Shankachuda is in our heart. And we all have our various jewels that we're attached to, that we're proud of, that causes us to think we're better than others, that causes us to be envious of others. And ultimately, if you're envious of any other living being, that is the expression of your envy for Krishna, who's the proprietor, the enjoyer of everything. Despite having that beautiful jewel, Shankachuda found no real peace in his life because he didn't understand the peace formula.
Bhoktaram yagyatapasam saravalok maheshwaram suhradam saravabhutanam gyatvamam shanti vrishtha.
Krishna is the proprietor of everything that exists in all planets and all cosmic manifestations. He's the source and the proprietor of all material and spiritual worlds. And everything is meant for his enjoyment. The very soul, which is our eternal identity, was created for one purpose, for Krishna's enjoyment. When we surrender to that principle, with trust that Krishna is the well-wisher and benefactor of everyone, then we can attain not only peace, but transcendental ecstasy in pure love of God. So let us, with all humility and sincerity, genuinely pray to Krishna to conquer this proneness for name and fame, to conquer this inclination to enjoy in the name of devotional service, and give us a pure and humble heart where we can sincerely serve the Vaishnavas in a spirit of servant of the servant of the servant, and really assist Srila Prabhupada in enlightening this world of darkness with the Sankirtan of Krishna's holy names. Please forgive me for talking too much. But I told Bhakti Charu Maharaj I would only speak 5 minutes. But his Bhagavad Gita discourse inspired me so much. I somehow lost control of my my mind and senses.
That was bliss.
Yes, your lecture was bliss.
And you submerged us in an ocean of ecstasy.
Maharaj, you are so merciful. I want to make a honest confession today that Srila Bhakti Charu Maharaj is such a very, very dear god brother, such a loving friend, and I'm so unqualified and so undeserving of his mercy that I pray that you all bless me, that I can genuinely please him in my attempts to serve the Vaishnavas, and that somehow or other, by some inconceivable arrangement, he may be pleased upon me.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Srila Bhakti Charu Maharaj ki.
His Holiness Srila Radhanath Maharaj ki. His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ki. Ram Keli Prabhu ki. Radhakund Prabhu ki. All glories to the assembled devotees.
Ram Keli Prabhu, it is his first time to Radha Gopinath Temple. And we don't have all that much time, but we would like... He's one of the most incredible preachers. He's one of those kind of preachers that can just make the heart ecstatic. He's really very well known and well loved by Vaishnavas wherever he goes. Ram Keli Prabhu, please, we would like you to enlighten us with your divine realizations.
What am I going to say? I spoke so much. Namo Vishnu Krishna Sai Buddha Srimati Bhaktivinoda Swamiti Namami Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gaudapani Vacharini Nivashishis Nivari Prasacharishitarma. Anyway, I'm glad to actually come here. I've been promising Maharaj for, well, as he said, for like years to come and visit him. And now I finally got the chance to come. And it is certainly actually very, very enlivening to see what he's actually done here. And actually very encouraging. And really, I shouldn't be sitting here. I should be down there with the other devotees, because I see actually what a wonderful job he's actually done here. And devotees have, in the class this morning, it was discussed, and just over the little time that we've been in India, so it came like the 12th of December, and actually many devotees are singing the glories of actually how you developed this preaching project here. And everyone that comes seems to be like very, very happy. But it really seems to be like the real Krishna consciousness movement, which so many of us actually sometimes miss out of, like you say, this Shankachuda mentality. But for sure I can see that actually this is Krishna consciousness actually exists here. And maybe by the mercy of you and Bhakti Chus Maharaj, that actually I'll get some of this Krishna consciousness. That is, I think, very much lacking in myself. But anyway, we go on trying to please Srila Prabhupada. as I said, just recently we've just moved our whole family to West Africa, to Ivory Coast. Similar, one of the reasons I actually wanted to come, because I heard that you were also doing this orphanage and taking in children that didn't have parents, which is very inspiring to myself, something that we've worked on for years and years. And to see actually other devotees actually developing that mentality, because Srila Prabhupada actually had the idea that actually we should try to save someone. As he came to the West to save so many fallen conditioned souls, which in actuality is a complete miracle, that he was actually able to take so many different people from so many different walks of life and so many bad habits actually, and try to endeavor to transform our character. So that transformation is still taking place. But he also inspired us to give us the idea that actually that we could become saved from our sinful activities, and in return try to reach our hand to save someone else. So in that sense, that no matter what we actually experience on our journey, on our march toward the path to Godhead, that we should always try to keep that mentality and remember where we come from, and actually remember how Srila Prabhupada has actually struggled to hold us together in Krishna consciousness, and to go forward with this idea of always trying to extend our hands to help another conditioned soul. And I think more and more I realize that, especially being an African, just as without Prabhupada's mercy, actually we had no chance of coming anywhere near Krishna consciousness. So in some of these countries that we go to, we must realize that unless we extend that same opportunity to other living entities, that actually they have no chance. So somehow, I don't understand how, except for the causeless mercy of Prabhupada, that he's entrusted us with this task of continually trying to save conditioned souls. Even sometimes they seem unsavable, as we feel sometimes unsavable, but actually, somehow or other, we actually have that task of doing that job and doing that service. In the same chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam that we're reading on Parikshit Maharaj in the Bombay Temple, in this beginning part is discussing about the Kali appearing, and Maharaj Parikshit actually allowing him to exist. So he says, yes, I will allow you to exist, but I will not allow you to make any forward progress. You can exist. I will allow you to exist in this one place. But because I am a devotee, that actually I cannot allow you to make any forward progress to increase your sinful activity on the rest of the world. So we realize that actually in this personality of Srila Prabhupada, that actually he was not allowing Maya to make any forward progress. In fact, he was reversing the progress that Maya had made. And we actually have to continue to not let Maya make any forward progress. First of all, not let her make any forward progress in our own lives. Stop her, reverse her, and also not let her make any forward progress in the lives of any other living entities. It means that actually we have to chase her away as Parikshit Maharaj held off the process, as a held off Kali from making any progress. And Srila Prabhupada did the same all over the world. He actually, we realize this more and more. And actually, without his physical presence, as we think that he's not physically present anyway, because he's always present, we sometimes have the tendency to become a little bit laxed or relaxed and trying to enjoy some material facility that we've received in our spiritual life and not keep fighting to actually progress or actually to help others progress in their spiritual life. So a lot of times we're thinking that, oh yes, there's so many people coming, they can give so much money, and because they're maybe giving this money, we don't want to speak to them too much about becoming more serious about their spiritual life, because we don't want to maybe agitate them so that they might not give their money. But we should always think that we have to help every person possible, every living entity, no matter where he or she may come from, to actually become more Krishna conscious, to follow those principles that have been given to us by Srila Prabhupada in disciplic succession, and to actually give this Krishna consciousness to as many people as we possibly can. We have to realize that actually if we don't do our service, someone's going to do. And they may not do as well as we would have done it because we actually had that direct association of the pure devotee. Or they may take to some other process of religiosity. But we must understand that actually we've been given the greatest gift. This Krishna consciousness is actually the greatest gift that any living entity could possibly receive. And we must realize that, and realize that actually we should accept it, let it take effect on our own lives, and also give it to others so it can take effect on them. Because without doing that, people don't actually have a chance of actually going back to Godhead, or approaching Krishna, knowing the devotees, knowing his pure devotees. There's no chance unless we all, as Maharaj is saying, come together to actually make this happen.
Rama Keli Prabhu Ki. Now we would like to request Srila Bhakti Charu Maharaj to lead us in Sankirtan. Would you like harmonium or kartals? This? Okay.